www.arttheater.coop/full-schedule. Disability Beat is sponsored in part by attorney Baku Patel of Patel Law, who practices Social Security disability law and represents those who have been denied benefits. There are no fees unless Patel Law wins your case. You can contact Patel Law for a free consultation to discuss your Social Security disability case. Patel Law is located at 108 West University Avenue in Urbana with offices in Danville and Decatur. For more information, visit patellawteam.com or call 217-384-1111. And now stay tuned for Disability Beat. This and other episodes of Disability Beat are
My name is Teresa Kircher from Carl Home Health Services. You are listening to Disability Beat on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, community radio for East Central Illinois.
This is Disability Beat, a public affairs program for and about people with disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for a discussion about guardianship and supported decision-making, which is best for people with disabilities. Attorney Jonathan Martinez joins the show today to have that discussion. But first, disability news for the week of January 16th, 2017. U.S. Supreme Court justices appeared ready on Wednesday to clarify and strengthen the rights of the nation's 6.7 million children with disabilities, perhaps by requiring public schools to offer a special education program that will ensure they can make significant progress. The case of a Colorado boy with autism, Andrew F. versus Douglas County School District, could have a far-reaching impact on millions of children and their parents, as well as the budgets of school districts nationwide. At issue is long-standing federal law that says children with disabilities have a right to a free, appropriate public education. Schools, courts, and parents have been divided over what this promise means in practice. The question under consideration is, must a school offer only a minimal special program that may offer some educational benefit to the child, as a federal appeals court in Denver ruled, or instead, do children with disabilities have a right to make significant educational progress, as lawyers for the outgoing Obama administration contend? However, most of the justices appear to favor setting a slightly higher standard, one that should lead the child to make measured progress on academics or behavior. Chief Justice John Roberts Jr. said it would not be sufficient for schools to provide an expert for 5 minutes a day and claim they were providing the child some benefit. But the Chief Justice and others said they were wary of setting an unrealistically strict standard that would require students meet certain goals. They also voiced worries about costs and an explosion of lawsuits. Parents who are dissatisfied with special education programs may remove their children from public school, enroll them in private schools, and then sue to have the costs paid by the school districts. But to win a reimbursement, the parent must show that the public schools failed to provide the appropriate education promised by the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. Lawyers from the U.S. Solicitor General's office joined in support of the parents. Irv Gorstein, a counselor in the office, said the law requires schools to provide a learning program, quote, aimed at significant progress in light of the child's circumstances, end quote. While this is not a guarantee of progress, they said it is an approach that will require schools to aim high. With a new hiring goal, the federal government plans to use affirmative action to grow the number of people with disabilities on its payroll. The U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission finalized a rule this month that will set a hiring goal for all federal agencies. Under the plan, 12% of each entity's workforce should be people with disabilities, and 2% should be those with targeted conditions, including intellectual and developmental disabilities. Moreover, the rule requires agencies to provide personal assistance services to employees who need help with eating, using the restroom, and other basic activities during the workday. Said EEOC Chair Jenny Yang, quote, "Increasing employment rates for individuals with disabilities is a national priority for the federal government. These new regulations provide concrete steps and accountability mechanisms to promote employment and advancement opportunities for people with disabilities across the government," end quote. The new hiring goals apply to all levels of federal employment. If agencies fail to meet the quotas, the EEOC said it would work with them to make improvements to their hiring and retention of those with disabilities. Federal agencies are already required under Section 501 of the Rehab Act to have affirmative action plans for hiring people with disabilities, which are subject to approval by the EEOC. The new regulations will take effect in January of 2018. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who has warned of a discredited link between childhood immunizations and the development of autism, has accepted an invitation from President-elect Donald Trump to lead a commission on vaccine safety and scientific integrity. A Trump spokeswoman would not confirm Kennedy's comment. Kennedy, son of the late U.S. Attorney General, said the president-elect, quote, has some doubts about vaccines. Kennedy said his opinions don't matter, but the science does matter, and we ought to be reading the science and we ought to be debating the science. Everybody ought to be able to be assured that the vaccines that we have are as safe as they possibly can be, end quote. Hope Hicks, a spokeswoman for the Trump transition team, said only that the president-elect was exploring the possibility of a commission, but that no decision had been made. According to Hicks, quote, the president elect enjoyed the discussion with Robert Kennedy Jr. on a range of issues and appreciates his thoughts and ideas. The president-elect looks forward to continuing the discussion about all aspects of autism with many groups and individuals, end quote. A wave of concern among some parents about a link between vaccines and autism sparked by a since discredited study led instead to an increased risk for children in contracting diseases eradicated decades ago. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention states explicitly that there is, quote, no link between vaccines and autism, end quote, citing its own and independent studies. And finally, Children's Entertainment Center Chuck E. Cheese's is looking to make its offering more accessible to kids with autism and other special needs. The restaurant chain says it's introducing Sensory Sensitive Sundays, a monthly event designed to provide a sensory-friendly environment. During the two-hour offering for families of those with special needs, participating Chuck E. Cheese's will dim their lights, have smaller crowds, limit costumed characters, and refrain from playing music or having other shows. After a successful pilot in Massachusetts, the company said it's expanding Sensory Sensitive Sundays to 54 locations in Massachusetts, Connecticut, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, New York, and New Jersey, with an eye toward a rollout across the country later this year. Said Christelle DuPont of CEC Entertainment, the parent company of Chuck E. Cheese's, quote, the buzz and feedback that we've been receiving has been super positive, so we're hoping to offer it nationwide sooner rather than later, end quote. Sensory Sensitive Sundays are scheduled for the first Sunday of each month from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. And that's the news for this week.
I got drunk at Chuck E. Cheese.
And you are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is Disability Beat. I'm Vicki Nicewander. And before we get underway with our interview for the day, just one announcement. The Governing Advisory Council for the CU Autism Network is hosting a community forum tomorrow evening, January 17th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Champaign Public Library in Robeson Rooms A and B. As of November 15th, the Autism Society of Illinois has disbanded due to a loss of state funding. There will be discussion about how to best move forward to support the quality of life for individuals on the autism spectrum and their families in our community. All community members are welcome and encouraged to attend. That's tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. at the Champaign Public Library. And now I'm pleased to introduce my guest for the afternoon, Jonathan Martinez. I first heard Jonathan at a conference in Indianapolis specifically, in December, and was very impressed with his depth and breadth of knowledge and experience in discussing guardianship, which is something that people in my experience just kind of take for granted. So you may be familiar with the case of Jenny Hatch. Jonathan was one of the key players in her court case, and he'll talk a little bit about that, I'm sure, too. So welcome to the program, Jonathan.
Good evening, Vicki. Thanks so much for having me.
So why don't you start, just introduce yourself to the audience, let them know who you are and what your experience was, and maybe summarize a little bit of Jenny's case and how that was resolved.
Sure. I'm Jonathan Martinez. I'm the Senior Director for Law and Policy at the Burton Blatt Institute at Syracuse University. Prior to that, I worked for a nonprofit called Quality Trust for Individuals with Disabilities. I've been practicing in disabilities law for 20 years and involved in issues like this my entire life. Jenny Hatch was someone I met in 2012. She is a pretty remarkable person. Jenny is, when I met her, she was 29 years old. She had been living in her own apartment. She had her own job for 5 years, paying her own taxes, living her own life, just like everyone else does. The only difference was Jenny had Down syndrome, so that when she got into a car accident, she found herself on the receiving end of a guardianship petition. Now, this was, again, a young woman who had graduated from high school, was active in political affairs, had a social life, went to her own church, and pretty much in the space of one half a day hearing, found herself in a group home, a segregated group home, where she wasn't allowed to go to her job or her church or see her friends, where her cell phone was taken away and her Facebook password was changed and her laptop was taken away. And if you wanted to see Jenny Hatch at that time, before I met her, you had to fill out a permission slip. You had to literally ask the guardians for permission to see her, and you had to agree that you would not talk to her about the guardianship case. So the first time I met Jenny, I kind of broke and entered. I walked in and was carrying a briefcase and gave a confident wave and said, "I'm here to see Jenny," and they let me through, and I offered my assistance to her. And she said she wanted me to be her attorney, and that started a one-year journey where, after a year of going to court and 6 days of trial, Jenny was freed from that guardianship simply because she, like everyone else, makes her own decision, or she has the ability to make her own decision. And she'd been doing that using something that we called supported decision-making. And we showed that Jenny used this method, even though it wasn't named that, to make her own decisions. What's supported decision-making? It's the way everyone makes decisions. Think about it. If you are going to the doctor and the doctor speaks jargon to you, it sounds like something you've never heard of before, you say, "Can you explain that to me like I'm a five-year-old?" If you go to the auto mechanic and the auto mechanic speaks jargon at you, you say, "Can you please help me understand what this is going on?" If you've got a friend you go to for advice, all of these things, you're using supported decision-making because you're getting the help you need to make the decisions you have to make. And we showed that Jenny, like everyone else, needs help, gets help, and when she got that help, she was able to make her own decisions. And after a year, the court agreed. And Jenny was the first person ever to defeat a guardianship petition in favor of supported decision-making. And I'm proud to say that since that time, she has been living free. She lives with her friends. She does what she wants. She's back at her job. And she's a frequent speaker around the country.
Who was the guardian for Jenny when that happened?
Initially, it was an agency called Jewish Family Services in Virginia. It then transferred to her parents.
And so, Jonathan, in most cases, in my experience, the idea of guardianship, the process of guardianship, starts very young, that parents are told as their kids are graduating or as they're turning 18 in school that they should just go ahead and do the paperwork and get guardianship. What's your argument against that for those families?
Well, first of all, you're absolutely right. That's exactly what happens by and large. We have been putting people under some form of guardianship for 2,000 years back to the Roman Empire. We have been assuming that people can't do things. We have been taking for granted that people with disabilities, just because they might need a little bit of help to do something, no different from you and I needing a little bit of help, can't do things. And that's such a strange thing, isn't it? That we judge people based upon what they cannot do. That we judge people based upon their limitations. You and I aren't judged that way. We are judged on what we can do. Did you take your job, ma'am, because you're bad at it? No, of course not. You limited the things that you can't do, and you accentuated the things you can. But for people with disabilities, it's the other way around. We don't look at strengths. We look at weaknesses. So we say from a young age to a parent with a child with disabilities, you're going to need to become this child's guardian. So at age 18, and young adults, 18, are the fastest growing people with under guardianship, we take away rights. There are studies after studies that say that 90% or more of guardianships are full or plenary, even though that just about every state law says that guardianships should be limited to just those areas where people can't manage themselves or make their own decisions. We are finding the vast majority take away all rights. One Congressman Claude Pepper, when he studied this, said that the average ward has fewer rights than the average convicted felon. Think about that for a second. Just because you have a disability, you have less rights than a person in prison. And you know what? That's what we see time and again. Now, you ask me my argument against guardianship. I've got an easy one for you. We have 40 years of studies, 40 years going back to the 70s, finding that when people with disabilities have more control over their lives, or more self-determination is the clinical phrase, they have better lives. People with disabilities who have more self-determination are more likely to be employed, independent, healthier, safer, integrated into their community, and more likely to manage their own funds and affairs. I'll give you a very recent example to back that up. Recently, there was a national study called the National Core Indicator Study. Now, the National Core Indicator Study is what I call an apples-to-apples study. It looks at people of similar abilities and limitations. They even used the old-fashioned terminology of mild, moderate, and severe disabilities. Now, this study looked at people's quality of life, how they lived their life over a number of different variables. One of the variables they looked at was whether people had a guardian or not. And across the country and across the board, including in Illinois, people who did not have guardians were more likely to be employed, independent, more likely to practice the religion of their choice, more likely to have friends other than paid staff, more likely to socialize and live in the community than people of similar abilities and limitations who had guardians. So what I say is this. I'm not here to tell any person, any family member, any parent, whether or not they should seek guardianship. That is an intensely personal decision. I would never tell someone what to do if I didn't know them or knew their situation. But what I can give people is information. I can give them information like I just gave them. I can give them more tools for their toolbox. And I can say this, guardianship's always going to be there. It's always going to be an option. Why should we rush into it? Why shouldn't we try something else first? The National Guardianship Association, for example, the NGA, is an organization made up of guardians, by guardians, for guardians. They do a code of ethics for guardians. They do trainings for guardians. They certify guardians. There is no one more invested in guardianship than the NGA. You know what the NGA says? They say, before trying guardianship, try something else first. Try something like supported decision-making. Try something to enhance people's self-determination, to see if that works. And if it does, great. If it doesn't, try something else. If nothing works, guardianship will always be there and it will always be an option.
So let's talk a little bit more about the idea of supported decision making and how can families implement that model rather than going through the legal hoops.
Mm-hmm. Well, supported decision making can be as formal or as informal as people want. The beautiful thing about it is it's not one size fits all. when I give presentations around the country, I always say, if you ever hear someone say, I have an app for you, I have a book for you, I have the one way to do supported decision making, run away and run away fast. Because supported decision making is individualized to each person. We look for each person's specific abilities, their preferences, what they need to make their own decisions. And we try to implement that. Some people just need informal advice, a listening ear, someone to bounce ideas off of. Some people can use it through a power of attorney where they say, I am going to work with you for financial issues and you for medical issues and you for lifestyle issues, where they pick people out and they specify how they're going to work together. Some people create micro boards or circles of support that meet regularly to discuss the person's life and the person's needs and affairs to help the person make decisions. What I say is this: supported decision making is less a method than a mindset. It is a paradigm, not a process. And here's what I mean. If we start here by saying that everybody out there has the right to make their own choices to the maximum of their ability, if we start with that commitment, and that's an easy commitment to make. That's just the Declaration of Independence, isn't it? We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all people are endowed with rights, including life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. If we start there, then the second thing is easy. We can say, I have this right, and I have the right to get help to exercise my right to make choices without giving up that right. I can get help, just like you and I get help. And if we take those two things as given, the third one's even easier, and it goes like this. There are as many ways to give and receive help as there are people. So I always say this. Before seeking guardianship, ask a really important question. What else have you tried? What else have you tried to empower this person, to enable this person to exercise self-determination? What have we done? And there's a million ways to do it. You can start in school, where you ask the school to implement self-determination goals and work together through IDEA and IEP planning and transition planning. You can go through vocational rehabilitation as you get older to work on job-based decision-making skills. You can go through Medicaid waiver programs for activities of daily living that include self-determination. All of these are potential avenues. And if you need more information about ways to implement that, please go to www.supporteddecisionmaking.org. That is the website of the National Resource Center for Supported Decision Making, an organization I'm the co-project director of. We've got resources, we have research library, we have model forms that you can use and implement and individualize for the people in your lives. Like I said, one size does not fit all, but one commitment can fit everyone, and that's this. Everyone has the right to make choices to the maximum of their ability. It is on us to help them empower that.
A little earlier, you referred to a study that people with who do not have guardians have a better quality of life. And why do you suppose that is? Did they address that?
The study itself, the National Core Indicators, is very clear that they are a correlative study, which meant that the people without guardians were correlated with having better life outcomes. They did not say that not having a guardian caused the better life outcomes. But if you want my personal theory on it,
and I
it's
do.
This. We know that more self-determination equals better quality of life. That has been proven through research time and again. So people who have more self-control over their lives have better life outcomes. We have shown that for decades. Now, if you are making your own decisions, if you don't have a guardian making decisions for you, it stands to reason that you have more control over your life. So to me, it's relatively, you know, my feeling is that it's A plus B equals C arithmetic. If I'm making my own decisions, I have more control over my life. And we know that having more control over one's life is a better life outcome. Currently, at the National Resource Center, we're actually doing some research to try to prove that empirically. But I think theoretically, it makes a lot of sense.
And then the last question I want to ask you is, what about people who have already gone through this process and gotten guardianship over their family member? Is there any recourse if they're thinking, well, gosh, maybe I shouldn't have done this? Is there something I can do to change it?
Yes, there are. Every state has a process for what is often called restoration or getting out of guardianship. Generally, what's needed to be proven is that the guardianship is no longer necessary, or that the issues that led to the guardianship are no longer existing. Now, this is not easy. I always say the best way to avoid guardianship is not to get in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But I just recently came through the first case in Washington, D.C., where a person got out of a guardianship. Really briefly, this was a young man with disabilities who, when he turned 18, his parents were told, you must get guardianship over your child if you want to get services. And they said, like so many parents, we don't want to do this. We don't want to. We have raised Ryan, his name was, to be independent. And we always want to support Ryan. And they were told, no, you must get guardianship. So reluctantly, they did. About 7 years later, they said, this is silly. He doesn't need a guardian. We've been supporting him his whole life. And what if we die before him? He'll have a stranger as his guardian. So they went back to the court. And they said to the court, please remove us as guardian. Ryan doesn't need it. He can do these things through a power of attorney. You know what the court said? The court said, well, if you don't want to be his guardians, I can find someone else. So they retreated, and they stayed as guardian until after Jenny's case, they found me. And we spent a year putting a case together, getting experts together, showing that Ryan can and does make his own decisions, that like Jenny, he uses supported decision-making, and like Jenny, he didn't call it that, but it was the same thing. He worked with his family and his friends to make decisions over his life. And we went to court in October, and the judge said, you're a free man. You can make the decisions you need to make like you've been doing your whole life. If you want to do a power of attorney, that's your choice. But he terminated the guardianship in favor of Ryan's supported decision-making relationships, the first person in Washington, D.C. to do so. So you can get out. What I tell people is it can happen. The best way out is not to get in. But if you get in, you know, I tell parents, don't feel guilty if you were pushed into this. It's not your fault if you trusted somebody who you trust. But we can take steps to help people be more independent if that's the situation. We can move forward. We can help people gain the self-determination that equals a better life. Not every case is the same, but we know, as a general rule, that self-determination is a far better thing than dependence.
And we take the advice of those professionals in education who really don't know the impact long-term.
Yes, it's a confusing and I would say scary thing. I was part of a study last year that found that the number one referral source for guardianship across the country is school.
Mm-hmm.
More than lawyers, more than doctors, more than family, more than friends, school. Just recently, the federal government put out a transition guide for schools that is the first time they have identified supported decision-making as a viable option to guardianship and essentially told parents that you don't have to do this. You shouldn't feel like you have to be pushed into guardianship. There are other options. And again, I'll say, sometimes guardianship is appropriate. I'm not here to say there should never be a guardian. But I am here to tell parents there are options and there is information, and you should try every tool in your box.
You want to give that website one more time before we run out of time?
Sure. www.supporteddecisionmaking.org.
Thank you so much for joining me today, Jonathan Martinez, and I look forward to hearing you more on this topic maybe in the future.
It's been my pleasure, Vicki. Thank you so much.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are podcast on our website at www.disabilitybeat.com or go to Facebook and look for Disability Beat Radio. Please send your comments and show ideas for guests or topics to disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Hope you have a great week. Pushing me